Our veteran population is over 17 million strong, and 72% of veterans live in a state where medical marijuana is legal. Yet, there are numerous hurdles and barriers a veteran must overcome in order to access cannabis. Additionally, veterans use cannabis for a variety of reasons, both psychosocial and physical. Yet the Veterans Administration currently does not allow their healthcare practitioners to recommend cannabis to their veteran population, which sets up a myriad of health and safety concerns for this vulnerable population. As veterans begin their journey toward wellness, they are looking for evidence-based answers to health concerns that extend way beyond the VA. So, if their VA doctor cannot recommend cannabis, and the evidence that they use does not consider dosages, treatments, and potential risks versus benefits, who can the veteran turn to for cannabis recommendations? Our veterans are looking to cannabis nurses to support their safe use of cannabis to treat their health conditions. And on this episode of Cannabis Nurse Truths, we will share the truth about cannabis is both helpful and potentially harmful in our veteran population. We also have a call to action to our legislators and healthcare providers who work within the VA system. Welcome to Cannabis Nurse Truths, where we are not afraid to share the truth about cannabis as medicine.
Welcome to episode number 11 of Cannabis Nurse Truths. I'm Lee Foster. Dr. Denise Foster is here, of course, as we share the truth about cannabis. Don't forget to check out our website, CannabisNurseTruths.com. Follow us on X. We are at CannaPodcast, CannaPotCast. And of course, new episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Google, iTunes, you name it. Or just go to our website, CannabisNurseTruths.com. Episode number 11, all about veterans and cannabis, a winning combination. The veteran population, Dr. D, is one of the more underserved groups. They give so much of themselves, and we do so little in return.
It's disgraceful how our veterans are treated in the United States. Our veteran population has the strongest social credibility, social credibility in that they've served with distinction and they've served their country. They've sacrificed everything. Their families and friends have sacrificed with them, not to the extent that they did, but obviously their sacrifices have allowed us to remain free. And the way that we treat them in relation to their health concerns, both physical and psychological, when they are no longer part of the active duty military, has become very much a problem under the Veteran Administration. And we see and hear about this daily. Some of the concerns in today's United States veteran population are that while we have 19 million veterans in the United States, there is an estimated 16 to 22 suicides every day in this population. That is twice the number of any population when you think about how these veterans are facing both psychological and physical problems. Psychological, the first thing that comes to mind is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And physical can be anything, a range from chronic pain all the way up to a traumatic brain injury. We have research that indicates that 1 in 3 veterans have depression episodes. 1 in 4 have anxiety. The majority of them have chronic pain. This is from their physical activity and labor during their military experience, whether they're on an aircraft carrier or they're marching across the desert, all of them are coming back with complaints of chronic pain. 1 in 4 veterans has PTSD. That's 25%. 25% of our veteran population has a post-traumatic stress disorder that ripples through every segment of their life. 17% of our veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan incidents have a traumatic brain injury. This is related to the explosions that are near them or that they were involved with. But 17% in this particular population is very concerning because now we're talking all of the physical and psychological concerns. 1 in 5 of our veterans has an alcohol use disorder, and 1 in 12 of our veterans has an opiate use disorder. All of this leads up to the fact that cannabis is now being looked at to either address these concerns like PTSD and chronic pain and even TBI, traumatic brain injury, while also helping to reduce those other substances like alcohol and opiates, as well as pharmaceuticals used to treat anxiety and depression and sleep. Since 2018, our veteran concerns related to physical or psychological health have been increasing, and they're up 6%, almost 7%, and they're up 6.5% since 2018, with no indication that that level is going to be reversed. The more vets that become involved in excursions or traumas outside of the United States involving wars or other conflicts, the more likely that they are going to have one of these conditions: chronic pain, anxiety, depression, PTSD. All of that can lead to substance abuse disorders involving alcohol and opiates, as well as creating the most extreme condition of suicide.
Basically, it'd be that those numbers, those figures aren't higher. Like, you have to wonder how many people are undiagnosed.
There are a lot of undiagnosed veterans, because what happens when you talk to your VA practitioner about any of these concerns? What are they going to do? They're going to prescribe you pharmaceuticals. The military loves to give out non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like Advil and Tylenol like they're candy. But we do know that these compounds create horrible side effects the longer you use them. They have no problem handing out prescriptions for opioids, antidepressants, anti-anxieties, sedatives. It's not unusual for a veteran to have a concern related to polypharmacy, where they're taking all of these drugs all at once, combining them with alcohol and with tobacco. And then when you throw in cannabis, the population of veterans has recognized through either word of mouth or by asking their friends, their relatives, the social media channels, where do I get my cannabis if they live in a state where it's not legal? In 2020, the VA published their National Health and Resilience in Veterans Study. They found that 12% of vets in the United States are using cannabis. 2.7% of those vets using cannabis were screened positive for cannabis use disorder. Only 1.5% of those individuals using cannabis as a veteran reported having a medical card. This is interesting. With 19 million vets in the United States and 12% of those veteran populations using cannabis, only 1.5% reported having a valid medical card. That means over 10% who were using cannabis did not have a medical card. So with only 1.5% of veterans reporting having a medical card, it begs the question, why don't all 12% of the vets who report using cannabis have a medical card? Well, there's this little sticky situation known as the Second Amendment. What are military members very familiar with? Guns, firearms. They carry one when they're in the military, and more than likely, they've used one if they've been involved in a conflict. Military members recognize that there is a very harsh reality that when you go apply for a medical marijuana card, you are now on a state registry that can be cross-referenced to your firearms registration. Therefore, many military members will say, I am not interested in obtaining a state-regulated cannabis product because I don't want to go to jail. Because we're back to the gun rights issues that we've spoken about before on other episodes. You can't apply for a gun license and lie on your registration when you say that at the federal level that you are not using a prohibited substance. When you use cannabis at that level, you are lying on your gun registration that you are using a prohibited substance. And that would probably be my understanding as to why only 1.5% of veterans reported having a medical marijuana card. Now we're back to, where are they getting their marijuana if they're using it, if they're not using it from a regulated licensed dispensary? We also found that 23% of our Iraq and Afghanistan veterans have PTSD. You combine that with the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans that have TBIs, which is 17% of them have traumatic brain injuries. You can see that cannabis is being looked at by these veterans as a way to treat not only psychological problems, PTSD, but also physical problems like traumatic brain injury that accompanies it with many other issues like pain, sleep, anxiety, depression.
Any of the conditions that the civilian population might use it for.
This is true. These are the number one reasons. Every study that has thus been published indicate that medical marijuana, the number one reason for using it is chronic pain followed by insomnia or sleep disorders, and these two problems go hand in hand. So it correlates with why veterans want to use it, but their uses of it extends way beyond just pain and anxiety and sleeplessness. The VA is between a rock and a hard place. They're a federal regulatory body. They're a federal agency that is under the Prohibition Controlled Substance Act, which considers cannabis as a Schedule I drug at the current time. Because of that, they are barred from any interactions with cannabis other than to record it as part of your use. The catch-22 in the VA system is that while cannabis is a controlled Schedule I, we have been prohibited from doing any research on it. So you can't do the research on what is effective and how to create harm reduction and weigh risks versus benefits on a prohibited substance that you're not allowed to research. And then you turn around and tell your population, well, there's no research on it that we can recommend, so therefore we're going to pretend that it doesn't exist. This is the catch-22 that has existed in cannabis since Prohibition, where we're not allowed to research it, and therefore we can't develop the studies, and because we don't have any developed evidence-based studies, we can't recommend it. It's a circular problem, and it is finally being addressed as more and more veterans are turning to cannabis to treat these physical and psychological conditions. Another concern about the VA is that the research that they do look at has overwhelmingly been looking at research about cannabis as a drug of abuse, a drug of harm. Until just recently, all federal studies looked at cannabis and how it was harmful and how to avoid the harms associated with it. Incidentally, we found that there were benefits that were accompanying cannabis use, more than likely related to compounds that were not THC. But because we continue to focus on the overwhelming effects of THC in the body and in the brain with regard to impairment, that's where we are most concerned. When compared to the overall U.S. population, veterans, especially veterans who are younger, like those that are coming back from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, report substantially higher levels of overall pain and severe pain. And that creates a situation where veterans become more than twice as likely to die from opioid overdose, either to treat psychological pain related to PTSD or physical pain related to the injuries that they sustained during their service. The issue at hand is that the VA doesn't see the problematic use of opioids as being worse than the problematic use of cannabis. When you compare opioids to cannabis, one comes out on top, and it ain't opioids. We've talked before of how opioids will cross into the midbrain. It is in the midbrain that all levels of physiological wellness and maintenance are sustained, meaning that the midbrain is where your respiratory rate and your heart rate and your blood pressure and your consciousness. This is where these types of functions that maintain the body occur, and opioids readily cross over into this area, depressing it, which is why the first thing to stop is your respirations. You suffocate when you take an opioid overdose because your body forgets to breathe. This doesn't happen in THC use. THC is not able to cross into that brainstem area. The brainstem that provides our body's physiological maintenance is not affected by THC, which now creates a safety dynamic and a harm reduction. We're not seeing the use of opioids to the extent that were used before when THC enters the equation. In every state across the country, when cannabis is legalized, either at the medical or the adult use level, opioid prescription rates fall. When opioid prescription rates fall, so does opiate use. And we're seeing reductions in opiate-related overdose deaths when states implement cannabis legalization. Veterans working in the federal system have their own unique challenge regarding cannabis use. 31% of our federal workforce is comprised of veterans. Now they're subjected to the zero tolerance policies that is assigned to their subcontractors as well. We have over 4 million federal government contractors and subcontractors. All of these individuals are barred from using cannabis, specifically THC, because it remains at the prohibited substance level at the federal level. Veterans using state legal cannabis face problems if they seek employment with either the federal government or a federal subcontractor because of the Drug-Free Workplace Act of 1988 that said zero tolerance, meaning one and done. If you are using THC and you test positive for it, you will lose not only your job at the federal level, you may lose your security clearance. You may be barred from having your benefits like retirement or health care. So the federal regulations are creating a disconnect with veterans who want to keep their service with the federal government in any capacity, but yet they are unable to use cannabis because of these zero tolerance policies.
Cannabis Nurse Truths is brought to you by Hemp Haven Wellness. Let's face it, hemp is complex, coming in several different forms. You probably have many questions about the differences between cannabis and hemp, and why hemp can be used in numerous ways to treat well-being. At Hemp Haven, they have the knowledge and expertise to guide your selection of hemp-derived products to meet your wellness needs. Hemp Haven is owned and operated by America's cannabis nurse, Dr. Denise Foster. With Hemp Haven, fight insomnia, relieve headaches, relieve pain, improve your mood, promote relaxation, and more. Visit Hemp Haven in Chesapeake at 480 Kempsville Road, or visit them online at hemphavenwellness.com. That's hemphavenwellness.com. For the highest quality and safest products on the market, you want Hemp Haven Wellness.
Medical marijuana use has doubled in the United States, according to a Department of Veterans Affairs study in 2023. As we understand that medical marijuana all by itself is being implemented in over 37 states across the United States, we think about how access to those dispensaries that are licensed and regulated under the state also can affect access for the military, our veterans. With 50 states doing 50 different things regarding medical marijuana, we have some states that will only allow individuals to use medical marijuana for certain conditions. There's one state in the United States that does not allow their veterans to use medical marijuana for PTSD, and believe it or not, that is Alaska. Alaska, PTSD is not one of the qualifying conditions to use medical marijuana. There's only a handful of states that allow doctors to decide if their patients should be allowed to use medical marijuana. Virginia is one of those where we lobbied in Virginia to let doctors decide, meaning that if your doctor approves that your condition is warranted for the safe use of cannabis, you can go have a recommendation. With the lack of access for medical marijuana for veterans at the state level, we now see that all state programs are not treating our veterans equally. Another concern regarding how we implement or roll out a cannabis program to our veterans is the education that we provide to them. Most of our veterans are very hesitant to talk to their VA practitioners about cannabis and a potential use for whatever conditions that they may have related to their military service. This is due to the false belief that once that they are written down, once that they admit to their practitioner that they are a cannabis user or interested in using cannabis, they're afraid they're going to lose their benefits. They're afraid of the stigma and stereotype. They're afraid that their admission to their VA practitioner will create a situation to where they are now stigmatized and barred at the same level that the Just Say No policy or the zero tolerance policy occurs during active duty federal workers. Conflicting laws at the federal, state, and VA level are creating loopholes in which the veterans themselves become a target because of these crazy laws, these crazy regulations. Here's a sad case of Sean Worsley. Sean Worsley is a disabled veteran with PTSD and a traumatic brain injury from his service in Iraq. Worsley was arrested in Alabama in 2016 for his possession of a state legal medical cannabis from his home state of Arizona. So let's unpack this. He originally got his medical marijuana card in Arizona because Arizona has certified that veterans who have PTSD and or TBI are on the qualifying conditions to receive a medical marijuana card. So Mr. Worsley abided by his state laws and got his recommendation to receive a medical marijuana card, which he had on him in Alabama, where he was arrested because he had state legal medical cannabis. So he was arrested in 2016 in Alabama for possession of cannabis that was legal in his home state of Arizona. And he was charged with having cannabis for purposes of other than personal use. Excuse me? You are being charged. You have a medical marijuana card that and you purchased marijuana from your legal state and you're carrying it through Alabama. And now you're being charged with more than likely intent to distribute, but they didn't call it that. They called it other than personal use. What does that even mean? What was his intent? Because he was charged with having cannabis for purposes other than personal use, it elevated that charge to a felony. So now it's intent to distribute. Worsley finally eventually reached a plea agreement that required only 60 months probation. You do the math, 5 years probation for having a legal card and carrying a legal state product into another state where he was charged with a felony of possession for other than personal use. He agreed to 60 months probation, drug treatment. He paid all the fines, fees, and court costs. Then, to comply with these stipulations, Mr. Worsley then contacted the Veterans Health Administration to submit himself to the substance abuse disorder treatment as required by the deal of his plea agreement. Now it gets really confusing. The Veterans Health Administration determined that his use of cannabis was state legal, and thus it wasn't necessary to put him into a substance abuse treatment because he was abiding by these state legal requirements. So therefore, he was not a substance use candidate for treatment. 4 years go by. He was then arrested again in 2020. And Alabama revoked his probation and then sentenced him to 5 years in prison, for which he served 10 months. So not only does this divergence between the federal prohibition and state legalization create burdens for these veterans who seek access to medical cannabis, these fractured state regulations create so many problems where this poor individual who thought he was abiding by all the regulations necessary got caught up in this catch-22 where he was a felon because he brought his cannabis into a different state and they assigned him a distributor of cannabis, which is prohibited. And because he was not allowed to enroll in the drug treatment program as prescribed by his plea agreement, he now was revoked and put into jail for 10 months.
That story is just heartbreaking.
It is.
All he did was go from one state to another. He probably had no idea.
No. Education. Because all of the states that have legalized cannabis have not come into agreements between themselves, right, about what they will allow or not allow in their state, what is legal and what is not legal. And it all boils down to education. Education about what's going on. And until the United States at the federal level gets its act together, we're going to have to deal with these schizophrenic laws that catch people like Mr. Worsley and create a situation that now we've created. His PTSD has gone off the charts because he spent 10 months in a felon prison system. And now he's got to carry that sentence with him, all because he was involved in a state medical program that was not recognized by another state. Since 1996, actually, 37 states, including the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, have adopted comprehensive and publicly available medical marijuana programs. There is a researchable resource online called the National Conference of State Legislatures. Every month, this entity, this body, the National Conference of State Legislatures, they will update cannabis changes that have been implemented at the state level. However, this National Conference of State Legislatures have all designated programs as being comprehensive in the cannabis industry if they meet five criteria. I should clarify that the state legislatures are looking at medical marijuana. We're not even talking about adult use, recreational use right now. We're looking at medical marijuana programs, and all of the states who have agreed to medical marijuana programs agree to five criteria. First and foremost is the protection from criminal penalties if you're using cannabis for a medical purpose. That is all related directly to the practitioner who recommends based on state's guidelines. Number two is access to cannabis through home cultivation, dispensaries, or some other system that is likely to be implemented. Three, it allows a variety of strains or products, including those with more than low THC. Number four, it allows either smoking or vaporization of some kind of cannabis products, plant material, or extract. And the fifth regulation, or the fifth criteria, is that it is not a limited trial program, meaning this is an actual program that is implemented throughout the communities within the state. So all of the National Council of State Legislatures have decided amongst themselves that we are going to allow and recommend and recognize a medical marijuana program if it meets all five of those criteria. It looks like Mr. Walsley's case, he met those criteria in Arizona, for which he was penalized in Alabama.
Dr. D, talk to me about why so many of our vets are turning to cannabis.
They're hearing a lot about it, not from the news, not from their VA providers or from their physicians or other healthcare providers. They're actually learning about it through their veteran networks on social media. Reddit is a great place for veterans to go ask questions. Their neighbors, their friends, their relatives, they're getting their cannabis education from informal sources that are telling them that this is beneficial. The research is starting to catch up on this, but what's concerning is that we're not getting this education delivered to veterans at the professional level, either in a dispensary. Their first encounter usually is seeing a healthcare professional who will tell them they don't know anything about it, but they'll give them the recommendation. Then their education begins when they get to the dispensary itself. Are dispensary workers licensed healthcare providers or licensed educators? That's a rhetorical question. The answer is no. The bud tenders that are found in our dispensary models in states are not educated to the level that they need to be in order to safely educate how to practice cannabis healthcare with a focus of harm reduction, reducing the risks, and maximizing the benefits. These veterans are getting their information mostly from social media. This is a big problem. What we do know is that veterans are using cannabis for many different issues. They're using it for anxiety and depression. They're using it to cope with their heightened negative affect and distress, and that comes from PTSD. PTSD is really where many of our veterans seek out cannabis for its what we would call hypnotic and memory suppressing activities. One of the adverse effects that we associate with high uses of THC come from the fact that you lose your memory. Where did I leave my car? Where did I leave my keys? What street do I live on? I can't remember how to drive. These are some very extreme effects of memory suppression. We call them extinction effects when we talk about cannabis in veterans with PTSD. The negative aspects of THC use in a normal population, where we don't want you to lose your memory, we don't want you to forget how to drive a car, can be turned into a positive effect when we talk about veterans in PTSD. Memory extinction is very effectively treated using THC in cannabis, which is why veterans are using it for that condition to help with their suppression of memory. We do know that when we decrease these hyperarousal symptoms, think of a car firing, backfiring in someone who has PTSD. That can set up a whole host of psychological problems, including anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, hyperreactivity, all the way extending to suicidal ideation if they think that they're back into that conflicting situation. We find that veterans have a 5 to 10 times more likelihood of having PTSD than the general population. If you consider the numbers of individuals who are veterans using cannabis, this begins to have a direct correlation that more than likely one of the diagnoses that includes the reasons for using cannabis is PTSD, which is why, except for in Alaska, it's on every qualifying condition in every state where there's a medical marijuana program. Cannabis is very effective for treating things related to exposure for occupational environmental hazards. Like many of our war veterans going all the way back to Vietnam have been exposed to things like Agent Orange, asbestos, burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. All of these are environmental hazards that can set up respiratory illnesses, different types of cancers. So veterans are turning to cannabis for their potential ability to help with the environmental conditions that have occurred because of their military service. There is what we consider a polytrauma clinical triad that occurs specifically in veterans. This is the condition where a veteran will have three different conditions and they are all related, causing a myriad of health and psychological problems. This is chronic pain and disabilities. Most reported symptoms of soldiers returning from deployment relate to chronic pain, which then lead to disabilities over time. Another condition related to physical pain is the traumatic brain injury. Remember that 17% of those veterans returning from the Iraq or Afghanistan conflicts have a traumatic brain injury. And many of them are going to exhibit the chronic pain and disability conditions that cannabis can be helpful with. And finally, the last member of that triad is that the traumatic brain injury and chronic pain and disabilities are complicated by a diagnosis of PTSD. If we consider that the endocannabinoid system, which we keep going back to, regulates and balances our brain health and the neurotransmitters and the function and formation of our brain tissues, they found that patients who were diagnosed with PTSD had lower peripheral concentrations of our own endocannabinoid known as anandamide. Anandamide is the cannabinoid found in our own body that gives you that feeling of euphoria. Anandamide is what runner's high is related to. It is our body's own THC compound. And when it meets the CB1 receptors in our endocannabinoid system in our brain, it gives you that feeling of euphoria. Ananda in Sanskrit means bliss. So anandamide is our body's own bliss molecule that is mimicked in the plant world by the cannabis, specifically the THC molecule. When researchers looked at the brains of PTSD patients, they found that these individuals had lower anandamide concentrations and the amount and locations of the receptors in their brain were increased. We're back to that phenomenon known as upregulation. When there are more receptors for a particular compound, in this case anandamide, that are not being married to that compound, the body begins to suffer. And those receptors are looking for something to marry that receptor to have the activity. PTSD patients don't have enough of their own endocannabinoids to fill these receptors. And what are they looking for? They're turning to the THC molecule, its analogous compound found in the cannabis plant, to help them treat their PTSD symptoms. The combination of these three diagnoses are the reasons why most medical marijuana patients who who are veterans will seek out high THC use. In fact, they showed that to obtain a better quality of life, these individuals are looking for the euphoric effect of THC, and these individuals are the ones that are at the most risk of using high doses of THC to self-treat these three confounding diagnoses found in the veteran population. When we think of better quality of life, that includes sleeping. The Veteran Administration loves to hand out pharmaceuticals to help with sleep. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, they're given opioids, benzodiazepines, sedatives, SSRIs, as in antidepressants. All of these will affect the central nervous system to give the feeling of being sleepy, but the problem here is, of course, first, the pharmaceutical is a synthetic compound. It creates a dangerous situation as tolerance occurs, meaning that you need more and more of the drug to achieve the same effect. And then in cases of all of these drugs, the sedatives, the benzodiazepines, the opioids, all of them can cross over through to the brainstem, which then can affect respiratory rate, heart rate, blood pressure, et cetera. And that's why we are very concerned about using overdoses in this particular pharmaceutical. When you think of how PTSD, TBI, and chronic pain can interrupt a sleep profile, many of the individuals who are using cannabis will use it for their sleep effects. Cannabis, by far, provides a healthier balance of sleep, and this has been shown in study after study, that the THC compounds will marry other cannabinoids like CBN and CBD and CBG in the cannabis plant to give you a better sleep quality. All of these treatments for TBI, PTSD, sleep, anxiety, depression, they lead to a better quality of life. The effects that you get from THC are tempered by the other cannabinoids like CBD, and when you combine them in the right ratios, we're finding that all of these can give you the euphoric effect that you're looking for while also reducing the impairing risks associated with cannabis use. Veterans are finding out that this is why cannabis can be used very appropriately to treat many of the symptoms, both physical and psychological. From the social aspect, veterans are using cannabis to reduce their pharmaceuticals, especially opioids and other benzos. We know that veterans are more than twice as likely to die of opioid overdose. We also are seeing cannabis being used to lessen the amount of alcohol and tobacco that veterans will use. We consider that cannabis is a much lower risk for overdose with minimal adverse effects. We know that alcohol itself can create a dangerous withdrawal situation. An alcoholic should never stop drinking alcohol without guided assistance from their healthcare practitioners or psychological counselors. In many situations, I know that in the hospital, local hospitals in our area, they have a protocol for alcoholics when they enter the hospital. They'll receive a near beer, a low alcohol content beer, a low alcoholic beverage with every meal, because we know that if they do not continue to maintain that alcoholic concentration in their blood, they can go into the delirium tremens. This can set up a dangerous seizure opportunity, which then can be life-threatening. I have one customer, one client in my shop. He was visibly concerned because you could tell immediately he came into the shop very anxious, very agitated. He was shaking, and we went through the whole screening process. You know, what's going on? What can we do for you? What do you need help with? And through it all, he admitted that he was a recovering alcoholic and that he had stopped drinking 3 days before his visit to our shop. He said, and I'm to the point now where I know that I have a choice. I can either stop at a bar and have just one beer, or I can come talk to you and see what cannabis can do for me. But I don't want to get a medical marijuana card. Why? Because I am a firearm holder. I have a gun registration, and I don't want to be on a state registry. Talking with this individual further, He had many social reasons as a veteran to use alcohol to treat his symptoms, mainly of which stemmed from PTSD. He was visibly shaking. He said, "I knew that if I go to a bar and just have one, it won't stop with just one. And this is your alcohol substance abuse disorder." We got him started with high doses of CBD. We wanted to interrupt that withdrawal and treat the symptoms of withdrawal. We wanted to displace the dopamine reward center by flooding it with CBD, which is non-impairing and non-intoxicating. And over a period of months, this individual was able to decrease both his withdrawal symptoms and not suffer from any insomnia or agitation. At that time, I think he would admit that this was the lowest point in his life because he had just lost his job. He successfully integrated back into the workforce as he cleaned his body of the alcohol. And before we introduced any THC, we had long discussions and sessions and educational sessions about how he could integrate THC safely at a low microdose and still attain the effects that he was looking for. And to this day, which is approximately 2 years later, he still uses a low-dose THC product, and he's very happy to admit that he has never returned to alcohol, and he has successfully held down a job as well as been a father and husband to his family.
Cannabis Nurse Truths is brought to you by Hemp Haven Wellness. Let's face it, hemp is complex, coming in several different forms. You probably have many questions about the differences between cannabis and hemp, and why hemp can be used in numerous ways to treat well-being. At Hemp Haven, they have the knowledge and expertise to guide your selection of hemp-derived products to meet your wellness needs. Hemp Haven is owned and operated by America's cannabis nurse, Dr. Denise Foster. With Hemp Haven, fight insomnia, relieve headaches, relieve pain, improve your mood, promote relaxation, and more. Visit Hemp Haven in Chesapeake at 480 Kempsville Road, or visit them online at hemphavenwellness.com. That's hemphavenwellness.com. For the highest quality and safest products on the market, you want Hemp Haven Wellness.
We can't move away from PTSD and veterans without talking about my hero. Her name is Dr. Sue Sisley. And in 2014, Dr. Sue Sisley was practicing in Arizona, actually the University of Arizona, as a psychiatrist. She was particularly interested in working with veteran populations with PTSD. And she noticed that through all of her work with a veteran population, they all noted that they used marijuana to help treat their PTSD symptoms. And she began to look at the trends of those individuals who admitted to being both a veteran and having PTSD and using cannabis, and the same population that didn't use cannabis, in terms of suicide rates. And found, surprise, those that used cannabis had less suicide rates. And Dr. Sisley petitioned the VA to begin the process of developing a bona fide study that compared these two populations and sponsored by federal grants and federal research monies. In March of 2014, Dr. Sisley's PTSD study was approved by the National Institute of Drug Abuse to be conducted and implemented at the University of Arizona. Well, some senators, some important people in power, became aware of this. And 3 months later, in June of 2014, Dr. Sisley was fired from the University of Arizona. The claim was that she was fired for funding and reorganization issues, but Dr. Sisley's belief is that she was fired in retaliation for studying marijuana to treat PTSD. Because all of the preliminary research that had been borne out by then showed that the suicide rates, the rates of anxiety, depression, the rates of chronic pain, all of these measures and outcomes were beneficial in the populations that were using cannabis. And at the time, Arizona did not have a medical marijuana program, 2014. They were actually getting marijuana from the National Institute of Drug Abuse, where we know that they were growing federal marijuana at their University of Mississippi farm that was more akin to a genotype that we consider hemp-like. So it wasn't really the dispensary type marijuana cannabis that you can access at your medical marijuana dispensaries to date. So this was even before implementation of medical marijuana programs. Moving forward, in April of 2016, so she began this with the approval by the NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, in March of 2014. Moving forward 2 years, in April of 2016, the DEA finally approved Dr. Sisley's marijuana and PTSD studies to study the effects of marijuana on veterans who suffer from PTSD. Because she was fired and no longer able to implement this at the University of Arizona, she created her own research institute at the Scottsdale Research Institute. And she has been a very active member of the cannabis community in relation to veterans and their access and safe use for it. She is not a user herself. She admits that there are still a lot of questions, and she's still not 100% completely on board with that this is the panacea, this is the remedy. But she believes that there is enough there for at least us to begin a study on how these programs of medical marijuana can be implemented safely in the veteran population, especially since we consider that they have suicide rates that are extraordinarily higher than the general population. The veteran population tends to use higher levels of THC in consideration to how it affects PTSD symptoms, traumatic brain injury symptoms, chronic pain and disability symptoms. So those veteran individuals are seeking higher doses of THC, which now sets them up for a tolerance issue. The more THC you use, the more tolerant you become to its effects, meaning that you're going to need to use more and more over time. This is setting up a situation where we are seeing increasing numbers of cannabis use disorder concerns among patients who have these issues, TBI, chronic pain, and PTSD, because now those states that have medical or adult use cannabis, you're allowed to go in there as long as you follow the state regulations. When veterans are self-treating and they're not getting education or guidance or recommendations from someone intimately involved in their health disorders, your VA practitioners, your primary practitioners in the community setting, even clinical practitioners that you may have, such as counselors or lay persons that maybe you attend a support group at a church setting or a public health setting. None of these individuals have been appropriately educated or trained on how to screen for cannabis use disorder. Cannabis use disorder will actually affect 33% of the population of individuals who use cannabis over a lifetime at high doses of THC. And this is especially true of those older adults, because those older adults, as we age, our brains change, our abilities to use our own resources to make judgments and reaction times and cognitive decisions, balance issues. This becomes a problem even without cannabis. You integrate high levels of THC and then implement a tolerance model. Now you can see how more and more cannabis in the older population in veterans can create a cannabis use disorder problem. One of the best ways to check our veterans and to assist our veteran population is to screen at every encounter as a healthcare practitioner with veterans for cannabis use disorder. CUD is the acronym for cannabis use disorder, and it is actually found in Diagnostic Manual Number 5 with a criteria. The cannabis use disorder is defined as a problematic pattern of cannabis use leading to clinically significant impairment or distress as manifested by at least two of the following occurring within a 12-month period. I want to, because it's so important to screen, and I hope that if you're listening, you're using a cannabis use disorder identification test that you can get anywhere to screen your patients, especially your veterans who admit to using THC to treat any of their conditions. Cannabis use disorder criteria include that cannabis is often taken in larger amounts or over a longer period than was intended. There is a persistent desire or unsuccessful efforts to cut down or control cannabis use. There was a great deal of time spent in activities necessary to obtain cannabis, use cannabis, or recover from its effects. There is a craving or a strong desire or urge to use cannabis. Recurrent cannabis use results in a failure to fulfill major role obligations at work, school, or home. Continuous cannabis use, despite having persistent or recurrent social or interpersonal problems caused or exacerbated by the effects of cannabis. Important social, occupational, or recreational activities are given up or reduced because of cannabis use. There is recurrent cannabis use in situations in which it is physically hazardous. Cannabis use has continued despite the knowledge of having a persistent or recurrent physical or psychological problem that is likely to have been caused or exacerbated by cannabis. This is known as denial. Tolerance occurs. Withdrawal occurs, so you either need to use more and more of it, or you try to cut back and you begin to feel the withdrawal symptoms, meaning that you feel physically and psychologically deficient or impaired because of it. A mild cannabis use disorder is defined as you have two or three of these criteria. Moderate is 4 to 5, and a severe cannabis use disorder is defined as the presence of 6 or more of these criteria that will provide a diagnosis of cannabis use disorder. Our veteran population is especially vulnerable to cannabis use disorder, cannabis withdrawal syndromes as they try to self-titrate down, or cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. The same condition that affects our adolescent population when they use too much THC is now going to affect our veteran population under the same substance use disorder criteria. So we need to do a better job at educating our healthcare practitioners to screen for veteran cannabis use disorder at every encounter.
Cannabis Nurse Truths is brought to you by Hemp Haven Wellness. Let's face it, hemp is complex, coming in several different forms. You probably have many questions about the differences between cannabis and hemp, and why hemp can be used in numerous ways to treat well-being. At Hemp Haven, they have the knowledge and expertise to guide your selection of hemp-derived products to meet your wellness needs. Hemp Haven is owned and operated by America's cannabis nurse, Dr. Denise Foster. With Hemp Haven, fight insomnia, relieve headaches, relieve pain, improve your mood, promote relaxation, and more. Visit Hemp Haven in Chesapeake at 480 Kempsville Road, or visit them online at hemphavenwellness.com. That's hemphavenwellness.com. For the highest quality and safest products on the market, you want Hemp Haven Wellness.
Access. Veterans can't access cannabis at their VA organizations. That's a big no-no. They are obviously getting their cannabis from states where it is legal at either the medical recreational dispensaries, or they're finding it in their own homes, meaning that they're allowed to grow it themselves. Their friends or family are growing it. Where we hope they're not getting it is from the back alley. The number one tenet of cannabis is know your grow. You have to know where that plant came from and that it didn't end up being laced with something that you shouldn't be using at all because of its risky properties. So we want to make sure that when you go visit the dispensaries, that these individuals, veterans, are getting at least tested, safe access to cannabis products that can help them or harm them if they're not educated appropriately. We know that veterans and their families are very supportive of cannabis legalization. In 2017, veterans were polled by the American Legion, and they found that 92% of the veteran households supported medical cannabis research, 82% of them wanted access to medical cannabis through the VA, and 22% of those polled reported currently using medical cannabis for treatments across a variety of symptoms and conditions. This study by the American Legion highlighted that there is a fracture between the federal drug policy at the Veterans Administration level and the state level that is allowing their veterans, along with the general population, to access cannabis at both the medical and recreational level. What are we going to do about that? There are many different pieces of legislation moving through the Congress. As most military members and veterans and their families support the VA, allowing their doctors to recommend marijuana, and they support legalization across the country, federal legislation is moving through the VA and other federal entities that will hopefully draw attention to this concern as legalization is considered at the federal level, moving it to Schedule 3. Three acts that I'd like to highlight. First is the VA Medical Cannabis Research Act. It was introduced in 2021, and it would require that the VA begin to conduct a series of clinical trials examining the effects of medical cannabis on PTSD and chronic pain, which are the two most predominant reasons that this population will use cannabis. Another act introduced in 2021 was the Veterans Medical Marijuana Safe Harbor Act. This would allow veterans to legally possess medical cannabis and use it under federal law, and it would also free the Veterans Health Administration doctors to issue medical recommendations for medical cannabis under state legal programs. This act would also require that the VA study the efficacy of medical cannabis for pain and opioid use disorder. We could finally get some numbers on how implementing medical cannabis would have an effect on opioid use in this population. Another act in 2021 was the Fully Informed Veteran Act, which would allow VHA healthcare providers to share information with patients about their state legal medical cannabis programs. None of these bills since 2021 have become law. We're swirling and swirling and arguing and conflicting, like in the case of Mr. Worsley, where we are focusing on the individual harms that it is doing in both the psychological and criminal justice realm by ignoring things like high THC use in our veteran population and not screening for cannabis use disorder to minimize the harms, while also putting these individuals in criminal jeopardy because now they're getting caught up in the conflict between the states and the federal level. There's a belief in the veteran population that if they discuss their cannabis use with their VA providers, that they would be denied benefits. This is not true. The first official directive to VA physicians came from the VA Office of the General Counsel in 2008 regarding medical marijuana, and it advised that VA physicians should not authorize, they couldn't authorize, meaning they couldn't give their stamp of approval on state-issued medical cannabis recommendation forms, because why? If they authorize this use for their VA client, their VA patient, they would be subjected to DEA prosecution and revocation of their medical license, because why? They were recommending a controlled prohibited substance. But this did not mean that they would be denied services to veterans if the veteran was complying to state laws. All of this confusion between what the VA was allowed to do, what the VA was allowed to do regarding their doctors' activities, their pharmacy activities, their nursing activities, it created a very confusing situation where veterans couldn't feel comfortable talking to these healthcare practitioners about their cannabis use. The VA finally updated their agency policy in which they say that all clinical staff, doctors, pharmacists, and nurses are able to discuss cannabis use with any veteran that requests information about cannabis as an alternative modality of treatment. And whenever cannabis is discussed, that information is entered into their section of their medical records without penalty. In fact, the VA has implemented specific policies, and you can find this at publichealth.va.gov, that specifically talks about VA and marijuana, what veterans need to know. Veteran participation in state marijuana programs does not affect eligibility for VA care and services. Let me repeat that. It does not affect a veteran's ability to be eligible for VA care and services if they are using a state legal program at either the medical or adult use level. VA providers can and do discuss marijuana use with veterans as part of comprehensive care planning and adjust their treatment plans as necessary. It's important that if you are a veteran or know a veteran, that they do discuss these cannabis products with their VA practitioner, because that becomes part of their health record. But knowing that, are they worried about privacy? Absolutely. They shouldn't be worried about privacy. Why? Veterans will not be denied VA benefits because of their cannabis use. Veterans are encouraged to discuss their marijuana use with their VA providers, and it becomes part of the confidential medical record, which is protected under the patient privacy and confidentiality laws and regulations. The HIPAA Act, the Health Insurance Accountability and Portability Act, this is part of the confidentiality protections that extend even to VA providers. We will not be allowed to talk about your cannabis use, and it will be not used against you. However, on the flip side of that, because of the federal regulations right now, VA clinicians may not recommend marijuana. They can only prescribe medications that have been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And here's the irony. Recall that the FDA has approved both a CBD product, Epidiolex, for children over 1 year of age for those uncontrolled seizures. And in my 40 years as a practicing nurse, I have been administering Marinol. What is Marinol? Marinol is an FDA-approved synthetic THC compound. So the VA would be happy to prescribe either CBD or Marinol, but they're not allowed to recommend the actual plant itself. VA clinicians may not complete paperwork or any forms to approve state-approved marijuana programs. Pharmacies may not fill prescriptions for cannabis on VA grounds. The VA will not pay for medical marijuana prescriptions from any source. The use of or possession of cannabis is prohibited at all VA medical centers, locations, and grounds. VA scientists may conduct research on marijuana benefits and risks and its potential for abuse if they are approved under the regulatory channels, but most importantly, veterans who are VA employees are subjected to the same drug testing laws under their terms of employment as either a federal government contract worker or a subcontracting government worker. So the take home from this particular notification is that if you're a veteran, talk to your healthcare providers about cannabis. If you are a healthcare provider, either in the VA system or in the healthcare organizations that are supporting the VA system, screen every encounter with a patient for marijuana use, cannabis use, as well as cannabis use disorder. But let them know that cannabis is an option and research is ongoing as to what the harms and benefits are. We need a call to action to educate, screen, and provide safe access for all of our veterans in the country, especially those that can benefit the most from what cannabis has to offer: PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and chronic pain. That's where cannabis will more than likely show that it is much beneficial and less harmful than the drugs that we're currently prescribing in the VA system.
You've been listening to Cannabis Nurse Truths with the great Dr. Denise Foster. I'm Lee Foster. Join us again next week, another episode. It'll be time for episode number 12 next week. New podcasts every Wednesday from Cannabis Nurse Truths, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, iTunes, you name it. We're on iHeartRadio, and we're getting ourselves onto new platforms all the time. So just search for us, go to our website, CannabisNurseTruths.com, and follow us, stay in the know, stay up to date. We're on X at Canna Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.